Board Member Harris.
Thank you, Chairman Doty, and Marty, Jennifer, and Jessica for your excellent presentation. 3 years ago this month, I participated in my first open meeting as a member of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. At that meeting, I stated that one of the many reasons that I was pleased to be on the board was the opportunity to see whether I could help contribute to making audit reports of public companies more investor-friendly. Today, the board is taking a giant step in the consideration of improvements in those reports. The need for improved communications between auditors and investors was recognized long before I joined the board. As others have pointed out, for more than 50 years, investors in various groups that have studied the auditing profession have been calling for changes to the auditor's report. When Congress drafted the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, it acknowledged the importance of this issue by clearly stating in the Act, as Jennifer noted, that the primary mission for the board is, quote, to protect the interests of investors in the preparation of informative, accurate, and independent audit reports, close quote. The events of the last few years have been a case study of the inability of auditors to provide investors with any meaningful signal about increases in financial reporting risks when management assessments or estimates change dramatically, or when debates over significant accounting issues become difficult or contentious. In the years leading up to the financial crisis, the business press highlighted several significant risks emerging from the credit markets that would impact the financial statements of investment banks, commercial banks, mortgage companies, and insurance companies. These risks included debt ratings from the rating agencies, what the press referred to as sloppy documentation and recording practices for derivative contract agreements, and the erosion in lending practices. As the financial crisis unfolded, many of these risks forced several public companies to file for bankruptcy or seek government assistance. These risks should arguably have been apparent to public company auditors. Yet the one real tool at the auditor's disposal, a going concern opinion, was rarely used. Out of the 10 largest bankruptcies during the financial crisis, only two had going concern opinions. During the year leading up to their bankruptcy filings, the market capitalization of the eight companies without going concern opinions declined from a collective $75.5 billion in the year prior to their respective bankruptcy filings to a collective market capitalization of just under $700 million at the time of their filing, a 99% loss in investor value. In addition to the $75 billion decline in equity market capitalization, fixed income investors faced even greater losses, potentially amounting to over $200 billion in public debt issued by these eight companies prior to their bankruptcy filings. Furthermore, none of the top 10 institutions receiving troubled asset relief program funds received going concern opinions before accepting a combined $295 billion from the government. The aggregate market capitalization for these 10 TARP recipients declined by $211 billion, and the losses most likely would have been greater if these companies had not received government assistance. There also were no going concern opinions for the major institutions that eventually were forced into mergers that resulted in significant losses to their investors. Mr. Chairman, when you testified at the Senate Banking Committee hearing last April on the role of the accounting profession in preventing another financial crisis, Securities Subcommittee Chairman Jack Reed said, and I quote, "The threshold question is, why were there no timely warnings about companies that within months of an unqualified report collapsed or were rescued at taxpayers' expense," close quote. In her December 6, 2010 statement before the AICPA, SEC Chairman Mary Shapiro expressed similar concerns when she said, quote, "We wonder if the eventual losses to shareholders and investors were multiplied many times because material information was not made available in a timely fashion by people who should have been able to produce accurate disclosures," close quote. Others have asked, where were the auditors during the financial crisis? What were the auditors' responsibilities, and how could companies so close to bankruptcy or in such need of assistance have escaped the going concern opinion? And if auditors were correct in not issuing going concern opinions or not sending any other message to investors about the financial and accounting issues they were seeing inside these institutions, what does that say about the relevance and usefulness of the current audit reporting model? As a member of the board, I have attended a number of PCAOB inspections, and I know what a PCAOB inspection entails. Very early in my career, I worked briefly for the internal audit division of a Fortune 500 company, and as a staff director and chief counsel of the Senate Banking Committee, I worked on a number of accounting and auditing issues. As a result of these experiences, I have a profound respect for the ability and competence of auditors, and I believe public company auditors know much more about their audit clients than they currently are telling investors. Indeed, the board's new risk assessment auditing standard requires the auditor, quote, to obtain an understanding of the company and its environment, and to understand the events, conditions, and company activities that might reasonably be expected to have a significant effect on the risks of material misstatement of the financial statements. Under the current reporting standards, however, there is no effective means for auditors to pass on any of that information to investors and other users of the company's financial statements. Last March, the board heard from its investor advisory group. In particular, one working group of the IAG was led by Professor Joe Carcella and included Brandon Becker from TIA Cref, Norman Harrison, formerly from Breeden & Company, Mike Head from TD Ameritrade, Bonnie Hill from Icon Blue, Peter Nachtway of Legg Mason, Gus Sauter from Vanguard Group, Ann Simpson of CalPERS, Eric Vincent from Osprey Management, and Ann Yerger from the Council of Institutional Investors. This working group surveyed leaders of mutual funds, pension funds, investment banks, hedge funds, private equity funds, and other investments to obtain a sense of what investors would like to learn from auditors. The individuals who responded to the survey managed more than $8 trillion in investments. Professor Carcello and his working group members did an excellent job summarizing and presenting the survey results for the board at our March 16 meeting, and 2 points stood out. First, investors want auditors' reports to include the auditor's assessment of the estimates and judgments made used by management to prepare the financial statements. And second, investors want auditors to discuss how they addressed the areas that presented the most significant risks that the financial statements might be materially misstated. Our investor advisory group working groups also provided important information. One of the more striking moments of the meeting was when the board was shown audit reports on the financial statements of a major financial institution from 2008, 2009, and 2010. During the financial crisis, that institution received TARP funds, and the audit fees from 2008 to 2009 for that institution increased by over 60%. But there were no changes in any of those audit reports. It was impossible to tell from those reports what insights the auditor may have had about the company at any particular point in the company's financial history. Ann Simpson from CalPERS, who led this discussion, said that this backdrop gives a sense of urgency to the need for a narrative report by auditors that will be actually useful. It was 97 years ago when Justice Brandeis wrote that sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants, electric light the most efficient policeman. This phrase became the foundation for the disclosure system that applies to public companies. But today, little light shines on the auditor's work or on the information that is gathered and analyzed during the audit process. Investors are saying it is time to turn on that switch. There's been discussion that rather than the auditor, management and the audit committee should provide better disclosures to investors about the financial reporting risks facing the company. I don't disagree that management and the audit committee could help to fill the void in investor communications through improved reporting to shareholders. The concept of an improved audit committee report to investors deserves careful consideration by the SEC, particularly given the audit committee's role in protecting the interests of investors. However, as capable as audit committees are, auditors still hold a unique and important perspective in the financial reporting process. It would not be realistic to ask an audit committee to be a surrogate for the auditor and to try to match the level of expertise and acquired judgment that an experienced and independent audit team brings to the table. Hearing more from the audit committee, therefore, is not enough. Investors still want to hear directly from the auditor about the potential risks of material misstatements in the company's financial statements and how the auditor addressed those risks during the audit process. Investors want to hear directly from auditors because they are expert, because they expect auditors to be independent and skeptical professionals who have neither mutual nor conflicting interest with their audit clients and who are willing to exercise unbiased judgment and report honestly on what they find. Auditors, in turn, need to understand that to maintain the confidence and trust of investors, they must fully embrace the concept that the company paying their fee is not their client. The ultimate client of an auditor of any publicly traded company must be investors. The U.S. Supreme Court confirmed this notion in the Arthur Young case, which described the audit as a public watchdog function that demands that the accountant maintain total independence from the client at all times and requires complete fidelity to the public trust. Clearly, that public watchdog responsibility cannot be handed over to the company. As a general rule, investors are not looking for more audit work to be performed by auditors, but for a public discussion of those things that should be obvious to an auditor following a well-performed audit. At a basic level, investors want auditors to ask themselves, what is it that if they were investing in the company, they would want to know, and for auditors then to highlight and provide that information. Investors also want to know those issues that came up during the audit and kept the auditor up at night. Because the primary goal is improved transparency rather than more audit procedures, I would hope that this project would not result in an undue increase in audit costs. All investors are asking for is what auditors already know. Nonetheless, I recognize that each alternative we consider may require an additional investment of time and money in preparing and issuing audit reports. We will need to consider carefully the costs and other consequences of each alternative. In that regard, the board does not have to make an all or none decision about any of the alternatives discussed in the concept release. The board might decide to create a proposal that blends selected elements of one or more of these alternatives. And I encourage those writing comment letters to be similarly creative in suggesting alternatives and approaches that will help us make audit reports more informative and useful for investors while not over-regulating auditor reporting. In closing, as the leaders of the profession recently told us, as Michael Barnier, the Commissioner for Internal Market and Services of the European Commission, has said, the status quo is not an option. This contract release is well designed to help us move forward. Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank you for your leadership in looking comprehensively at where the profession is headed, for taking on the tough issues, and in particular for bringing this issue before us today. I also would like to recognize Dan Gelzer for his efforts while acting chairman to continue to push these issues forward. In addition, I want to thank, as others have, Marty Bauman, Jennifer Rand, Jessica Watts, and Dan Mutzik from our Office of Chief Auditor for their efforts, as well as that of Bob Burns and Nina Majuri-Assad from our General Counsel's Office, as well as the investors, auditors, audit committee members, members of management, other regulators, and past leaders of the accounting profession, among others, who participate in the board's outreach efforts. This project is an excellent example of the PCOB staff and members of the public working together to turn a long-standing problem into a concise list of current ideas and alternatives for the board and others to consider. Finally, I want to thank our investor advisory group, and in particular Professor Joe Carcella and the other members of his working group for their hard work and clear articulation of what it is that the surveyed investors as a group want to learn from investors. Mr. Chairman, I support the publication of this concept release. I look forward to reading the comment letters. I think I'll defer asking any questions until after we've heard from Lou and Jay. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Ferguson.
Yes. I have a statement that I'm going to actually insert it in the record and just point out a number of the factors that I think the board, or at least this board member, will be considering as this goes forward and as we read the comments and hear the roundtable. First of all, I'm delighted that we've undertaken this project. I think that we've done this board has done a number of important things in its 8-year life, but I think this will be one of potentially the most important and most significant things we've ever done, and I totally support the issuance of the concept release. As a result of your extraordinary outreach efforts and the very broad attempts you made to gather information from all kinds of sources, I think we've heard very clearly the views of investors, and that investors believe that the current reporting model, while it is useful, is in fact not very useful, and in fact that it has a certain use, but it's not nearly as useful as it could be. I think we've heard very strongly from investors that they believe that the auditors are in a unique position, given their technical expertise and their long history with the companies that they serve, to understand the financial risks and the reporting risks that companies have, and that information is largely masked from the public. So I think we have heard that to begin with. At the same time, I think we're quite sensitive to the fact, or at least I'm quite sensitive to the fact, that management is and must remain the primary source of financial information for the company, and that the auditor has no special expertise in commenting on issues like the business model or the business risks. That said, I also agree with Steve Harris that I think we heard from investors, and I believe this as well, that management and the audit committee, that we heard a lot of commentators who said that if we want more information, management should provide it. I think what investors feel is that the auditor has a unique position because he's independent, and they want to hear an independent view. So that is, I think, one of the factors that certainly I will be considering. Finally, you know, I think we're quite aware of the risk of as we make changes here, of whether we will be inserting the auditor into the financial reporting process. Does that in any way, shape, or form threaten the auditor's independence? If we begin to have reports that are uniquely tailored to companies, to particular companies and their risks, what does that do for the comparability of financial reports? And remember, one of the reasons we ended up with the pass-fail model many years ago was to get away from audit reports that were uniquely tailored, read like movie reviews, and you couldn't compare them. So I think we have to be sensitive to the fact as we go forward here that comparability of financial reporting is very important as well. Finally, we're going to be sensitive to the fact that some of the things we propose here could be costly. And I think we want to hear from commentators as to whether these costs will be justified and how much should they cost. How much is it worth putting into this? So, and I also would hope that we would hear from commentators any things we haven't thought of. We don't have a monopoly of ideas here. And I think what we've heard so far, while we've had some extraordinary and wonderful ideas brought to us, there may be others, and we'll be very open to and sensitive to those ideas. So I want to join my colleagues here in thanking our entire staff for the extraordinary work they've done. It's just been quite remarkable. To the terrific work that the Office of the Chief Accountant at the SEC has done and their cooperative work, and to Steve and his Investors Advisory Group, which has put hours and hours and hours of work in here, and I think really brought forward in a way that had never been, at least to me, articulated as clearly as it was, the dissatisfaction of investors with this model and their ideas of what they believe they would like to hear. So that said, let me ask a couple of questions here. Some of the models and some of the things that are being proposed here require much more individualistic audit reports. One of the questions and one of the concerns I would have if we go down the road of changing these audit reports, how do we prevent these from, over time, deteriorating into formulaic reports that, in fact, go back to masking what the auditor really thinks? What are your thoughts about that? Have you thought about how we would prevent that?
Well, we've certainly considered that as one of the potential risks in this future reporting model. Certainly, we're still in the concept release stage, so we're soliciting feedback on that particular issue. I guess the only thing I can really add to that would be the clarity of the audit requirements that we ultimately write should prevent that situation from arising. We should be writing audit requirements that require the auditor to disclose particular information about a particular company that is not formulaic. Having said that, that's an important matter for us to hear about from commentators, that risk, and it's an important matter if we go down that route for us to work together on to develop appropriate standards.
If we go down the road, to go back to a question that Dan asked, if we go down the road of asking the auditor to either disclose disagreements with management or areas that were close calls, do you think that poses the risk of effectively forcing management to adopt the auditor's view? And does that threaten the auditor's independence? Does the auditor in that event become part of the reporting process? Are you concerned about that?
Well, the auditor is already a critical part of the reporting process. I mean, today, when an auditor does a good audit and the auditor identifies an error in his view in with respect to the accounting, the auditor says to the issuer, either you change that or I'm going to give you I'm not going to give you an unqualified opinion. With respect to disclosures, if there's a material omitted disclosure, the auditor says, notwithstanding the fact that the client may not want to disclose that, if you don't disclose that required material disclosure, I'm going to give you a qualified opinion or a disclaimer of opinion. So I think already the auditor is in a position with significantly influencing management when they have disagreements that either you make that change or you don't get an unqualified opinion. So I see this as a continuation of that same situation today where auditors have a key role in what those financial statements ultimately say. Now, with respect to some of these other areas where they're within the framework, that they're acceptable within the framework, but the auditor might have a different view as to how they may have done it, would that increase the auditor's involvement in the way you're suggesting? I think there's some risk of that. I think we have to think of ways to make sure that as you said, management remains the primary source of reporting financial information. But I don't think we can get away from the situation where the auditor is an active participant and an active participant in the decisions as to whether the financial statements present fairly.
But, you know, today in the cases where those disagreements occur, the auditor's only hammer really is not to sign the audit, to say, I will not sign the audit opinion. We may potentially give the auditor a much broader range of weapons here where management is going to say, you're not going to not sign this opinion. And so the auditor may end up backing down today. With these new weapons, doesn't that give the auditor more power, really, to force management to come around to his view? The auditor can say, I'll sign the opinion, but I'm going to disclose that I don't agree with what you're doing here, or that this is highly risky.
We acknowledge in the concept release that some of these proposals would give the auditor additional leverage with respect to the auditor's views on particular issues, that if the auditor were to disclose those matters in, for instance, the AD&A, that could further influence management as to what that accounting should be. So that issue is of additional leverage is discussed in the concept release, and we'll certainly be interested in comments that we receive as a result of that.
I mean, to some extent, some of the things we might propose here, for example, having the auditor comment on the management discussion and analysis section of the financial reports goes outside the financial statements or the footnotes themselves and might require action by the SEC. Are we talking with the SEC or FASB about coordinate action that might be required to achieve some of the things we're potentially looking at doing here?
Yes, we are. First of all, with respect to the SEC, as has been mentioned a number of times, we've been working very closely with the SEC staff virtually from the beginning of this project. And they've spent a lot of time with us sharing their views on this. So our work with the SEC has been very close to date. We would expect that as we explored other alternatives going down the road, that type of close working relationship would continue. We would need to discuss with the SEC how we believed we needed to expand auditors' responsibilities and therefore ask the SEC staff to consider ways in which they could propose regulations that would require that where it's not required today. So, yes, we're working closely with the SEC on all aspects of this. We have to work very closely with them if it included expanded auditor reporting outside of existing requirements. We've also had discussions with the FASB. Many investors talked about the fact that they believe disclosures are not adequate today. that there's too much of an emphasis that the balance sheet is simply an accurate number and not enough information in the footnotes to give the perspective that there's significant measurement uncertainty with respect to certain aspects of the balance sheet. So some of that has been discussed with the FASB in the context of their disclosure framework project and other things they're doing. But having said that, as has been pointed out before, even if those changes were made, investors are still saying, at the end of the day, they want to hear the auditor's views about the risks in the audit and how they address them, and the auditor's views about the risks of material misstatement in the financial statements.
I also note that some of the international regulatory agencies are looking at re-examining the auditor's reporting model. For example, the Financial Reporting Council in the United Kingdom is looking at actually doing it slightly different way through an audit committee report. But the European community has also put out reports saying that this report may well need to be changed. Are we coordinating with those bodies? Are we talking to them about what they're doing and considering what they're doing as alternative approaches?
We're certainly, at a minimum, certainly we're monitoring all of the activities. And as you said, there are a number of activities by different parties considering potential changes to the auditor's reporting model. With respect to some of them, our monitoring is quite active. For instance, the IAASB has a representative that sits on our standing advisory group and therefore has been a participant in the discussions that we've had at SAG pertaining to the auditor's reporting model. Thus, they were well aware of things that have been discussed. I sit on the IAASB's consultative advisory group, the equivalent of their SAG. So I was a participant as they developed their thoughts about changes in the auditor's reporting model, and I had input into what they were doing. And we've had discussions with the FRC about their proposal. So certainly we're talking to all of the other standard setters and regulators about what they're doing. On the other hand, I think in our concept release, we're exploring the ideas that we think are the most appropriate. But we're well aware of and staying close to all developments in this area.
I guess a final question would be, I know we're considering certain other proposals, including the identification of the audit partner and other audit firms that participate in this. How does this project coordinate with or relate to other things that you all are working on right now, other projects?
I think they're very related. I think the issue is the auditor's report is just not giving enough information to investors today. So the one we're talking about today is for the auditor to talk more about the audit and the financial statements, creating transparency into how the audit was done and transparency into the auditor's views about the financial statements. The other two projects that we're actively working on, the project you referred to, additionally creates transparency into the audit. Who performed the audit? Who was the engagement partner? And what other firms participated in the audit? And what was their relative participation? So investors could know, for instance, if it was not a registered firm that participated, if it was a firm that we were unable to inspect that participated, if it was a firm that had received a bad inspection report that participated. So again, it provides greater transparency into the audit, just as this does. So they're very related.
Thank you. And again, thank you for your extraordinary work. That's all I have.
Thank you, Lou. Board Member Hanson.
I'd like to join my fellow board members in thanking the staff in the Chief Auditor's Office and the Office of General Counsel. You've done a remarkable job. As you do in all the board standard setting projects, you've received a lot of input from various members of the PCOB board and staff. And however, I think this project represented particular challenges because of the breadth of the potential changes, the difficult issues involved, and the many views that were expressed during your outreach efforts over the last year. I believe the result of your hard work is a well-written and comprehensive concept release that presents fairly many important considerations relevant to changing what has been the standard audit report for decades. That said, we know the concept release does not address all the considerations that should be explored in connection with expanding the auditor's report, nor does it represent all the possible alternatives that one could adopt to improve the auditor's report. So the most important message I have today is that we're interested in receiving robust comments from folks responding to the release. We'd in particular like to hear from a wide range of investors of all sizes and types, as well as from investor representatives such as audit committee members, analysts, and others. We would really like to understand what information auditors can provide that would be most meaningful to those in making investment decisions or analyzing the information, how it will be used, how it will affect their decisions. In other words, that difficult benefit side of the cost-benefit discussion. I'm encouraged by the attention that members of the audit profession are giving to this project, as others have noted, and by their acknowledgement of the need for change. I look forward to their continuing engagement on this important issue. Just expanding on a couple points in the comment in the release. While the potential changes to the auditor's report have been discussed periodically over the years, I agree with my fellow board members that the time has come to respond to the calls for change. Financial statements and their audits have become increasingly complex. We are moving away from an industrial age of accounting and moving to an information age with models that are much less objective than in the past. Financial reporting involves an increasing use of estimates and judgments, and acceptable answers may fall into a wide range, resulting in a mixed attribute model where some numbers are softer than others. Coupled with innovative investment and business structures, interpreting financial results can be a challenge for even the most expert users of financial statements. This new world crisis became painfully real to many of us during the recent financial crisis, involving the failures or near failures of systemically important entities that had received unqualified audit reports just months earlier, as Board Member Harris pointed out. Important questions have been raised about whether more communication by auditors about what they do and what they think could provide investors with important insight about the risks associated with their audit clients. Therefore, I support the board's project and the issuance of the concept release. Some of the proposals discussed in the release inevitably require us to consider not just what is written in the auditor's report, but to think more about the auditor's role in general. Certain disclosures described in the release could be made based on the work the auditors currently perform routinely. Other disclosures may require additional procedures to be performed, such as the management discussion analysis part of the project we've discussed. Either or both may be appropriate, and as noted in the release, we look forward to receiving input on the usefulness of the various approaches. However, as someone who has performed an audit for over 30 years, I'd like to sound one note of caution. Auditors do a great deal of work and obtain important insights about the information that goes into their clients' financial statements. They may be able to provide additional information about the audit work they performed and what it means, or about the risks of a material misstatement of the company's financial statements, or about the company's accounting policies and significant judgments or estimates. However, auditors are not analysts or investment advisors. They are not trained as an analyst would be in evaluating communicating the overall business and strategic risks of the companies they audit. So to the extent the board ultimately decides to expand the role of the auditor beyond attesting to the fairness of their clients' financial statements, the education and training auditors would need to evolve. It would take time not only to introduce new requirements at the college or university level, but also to create an environment where practicing auditors can pass on their knowledge during on-the-job training that is so fundamental to a good auditor's development. I believe that any audit standard proposed by the board to increase the scope of the audit reporting must initially focus on the key areas of expertise and the auditor's key areas of expertise in the areas of financial reporting risks rather than the business, operational, or strategic risks. One important challenge for the board will be how to structure any new requirement for the auditor's report in a way that provides meaningful information to investors. Boilerplate language and checklists are of limited use, but we must also avoid the common pitfall of coping with difficult accounting models simply by increasing disclosure. I've heard complaints about disclosure overload, disclosure fatigue, and accounting fatigue. We'll have to be mindful that more disclosure does not always mean better disclosure. We'll need to determine how to provide auditors with sufficient guidance about the nature and extent of information to include in their reports. What is the appropriate materiality or significance threshold auditors should use to determine whether to highlight significant transactions and judgments and estimates? How does the auditor decide which accounting considerations will be most relevant to investors? Our experience in inspections is that many of our findings relate to the most subjective and difficult areas, including issues related to the valuation of investments. We understand that audit firms are putting significant resources into this area to attempt to get it right. To the extent new requirements of the auditor's report require the disclosure of subjective information, firms will encounter similar difficulties. Likewise, subjective requirements will present challenges to us as we inspect as to whether or not the work of the auditor complies with our requirements. in addition to the extent new auditor disclosures involve their views and opinions on management's predictions about the future, auditors have valid concerns about potential increases in their liability. For certain forward-looking statements made by management in its management discussion analysis, there are safe harbor protections if the predictions do not come to pass. Should similar protections be implemented for auditors? The board must carefully consider how to balance the potential benefits of increased auditor communication with the potential cost. Depending on the nature of the additional information to be included in the auditor's report, auditors may have to carefully consider what information to highlight for investors and how best to communicate that information. This will not be an insignificant effort. Writing clearly and concisely while communicating everything of importance to an investor will be a real challenge. It will require input from the most senior participants in the audit and from the audit firm's management. As I noted in my comments during the board's open meeting on March 22nd of this year, if this task is to be accomplished in a way that will provide meaningful information to investors rather than vague boilerplate, it will not come cheap. There also may be other costs or unintended consequences the board should consider, and we hope to hear about those during the comment period. I expect the board will carefully evaluate investors' comments about the type of information that will be most meaningful in order to find an appropriate balance between the benefit and potential cost of any proposed changes to the standard auditor's report. One last issue I'd like to raise today is how increased reporting by the auditor will affect the timing of the delivery of the audit report. With filing dates as early as 60 days after year-end, increasing complexity in judgments in almost all the accounting areas, the concentration of calendar year-end companies, and no excess capacity in the audit profession, how will it all get done? Our goal is to improve audit transparency without negatively impacting audit quality, so I'd be particularly interested in comments on how to address this issue as well. I look forward to receiving robust, balanced, and insightful comments on all the relevant issues. Although there are challenges ahead, the need for change is clear. Investors demand and deserve a more effective, meaningful, relevant auditor's report that better reflects the important work and expertise that auditors can provide. In closing, let me thank the staff again for their hard work. More is yet to come, but I'm confident they will rise to the challenge. So just a couple questions, and bridging some of the questions my fellow board members have asked. And one of them relates to how this project kind of interacts with some of the other projects. And I know Lou asked that question with particular emphasis on a couple projects, but I want to circle back to the audit committee question. So we have a project that's been underway for a while on improving the communications between audit committees and the auditors. And I sometimes step back and scratch my head about the conflicting views we've heard about how well corporate governance and audit committees are working. Yet balanced with the need for investors to hear more. Marty, do you see any risk or possible path that this might take where because the expanded auditor reporting directly to investors that we might not even need communications with audit committees?
No, I don't see that. I don't see that risk. As you know, as you commented, we did propose a revised standard on communications with audit committees as an existing standard, of course. We received good comment on that proposal. We also held a roundtable to have further discussions with all the various different participants at the roundtable and received further good input. I think the communications with audit committees is a critical part of the audit and a very valuable part of a high-quality audit. We're working together, our staff is working together, to bring to the board a revised proposal or final standard with respect to communications with audit committees in the relatively near term. I think they go hand in hand. Much of what investors are looking for would be based upon what's in those communications with audit committees. But to the extent that we determine based upon comments or other work in this project that something's going to be communicated to investors that's not already covered in the audit committee communication, I think we would go back and amend that because it would seem to me that the first level of discussion in governance should be communication with the audit committee and then disclosure of those important communications to investors. So the projects work closely together, but the communications with audit committee standard is still very, very important to high quality audits.
I agree. We've mentioned a couple times in our comments the going concern questions, and I think we have a separate project going on that, and yet some of the things being addressed in this project are pretty front and center to what's also on investors' minds relative to going concern. Are we still moving ahead with that separate going concern project, and kind of what are the other moving parts associated with that are presenting some challenges?
There are a lot of moving parts on the going concern project, and has been mentioned by several board members, concern about whether or not going concern opinions should have been given at certain points in time during the financial crisis. A number of developments are underway. The FASB, some time ago, decided that it should consider whether or not the going concern responsibilities that are right now only in the auditing literature should be moved to the accounting literature, such that management should have a responsibility for assessing whether there's substantial doubt about their ability to continue as a going concern. That project has evolved a bit at the FASB, where they're considering it to be possibly more of an early warning system of risks and uncertainties that the company may face. We are working closely with the FASB on that project and with the SEC to determine how they come out with respect to what needs to be disclosed in the financial statements. And I think based upon what needs to be disclosed in the financial statements may ultimately affect what our going concern opinion or standard requires. So that's continuing. Certainly some of the types of disclosures that could be in the auditor's reporting model as well that we've discussed today could raise the auditor's views about, you know, potential risks and uncertainties of material misstatement in the financial statements. That'll be considered as well, I think, as we get comments on that as to how that might impact the going concern standard. But it's the project to assess that going concern standard is alive and well. We're working closely with the FASB and the SEC in considering that.
Last question. I mentioned at the end of my comments about that concern about the timing of how our auditor is going to get this done, and I reflect on my career in auditing, and you probably had similar experiences in your career as auditing. The close calls don't come at the beginning of an engagement; they come at the tail end, at the midnight hour when you finally come to grips with an issue, and with that short filing period of only 60 days, and we don't control that. That's securities law that controls that. Have you heard significant concerns about that from any of the folks we've done our outreach with?
We have heard concerns, certainly. The audit profession has expressed concerns about the impact of certain of the alternatives here, especially the AD&A, on the timing of the audit, for reasons that you just articulated, as well as the fact that consider a firm that could have 1,000 or so different audit clients and hundreds or more partners individually on those audit clients, for a firm to have those partners writing kind of freelance reports, which is what the AD&A contemplates. Firms would want to ensure some quality control around that, some consistency such that the firm wasn't taking a different view on the same issue based upon two different partners having different views on essentially the same issue. So we think we have heard challenges about that with respect to the timing, and we've asked some questions about that in the release to deal with those challenges. But the MD&A would be another one. Right now there's the audit of the financial statements, and as we all know, that can go up to the very last hour, requiring the auditor to report on the MD&A within the same time frame. Could create additional pressures on the system as well. All of these things are very important to investors, but it's very important for us to analyze the ways in which this could be done, how these concerns could be mitigated, so we come out with appropriate standards at the end of the day.
Okay. I'll turn back to the chairman.
Other questions?
Yes, I have two questions. During our March 2011 Investor Advisory Group meeting, investors expressed concern about the lack of warning given by auditors during the recent financial crisis, as I mentioned in my opening statement. Can the staff comment on how any of the various reporting alternatives discussed in this concept release may have helped investors had they been in place at the time of the financial crisis?
Well, I talked about that a little bit in my comments. For instance, forgetting the fact that they didn't have a going concern opinion, The emphasis paragraphs, for example, could have directed investors to those particular aspects of the financial statement disclosures that were very sensitive, where there's potential risk to the company of material misstatement, depending upon various outcomes, or risk that the company could ultimately face going concern. So the emphasis paragraphs could have played a key role in that situation. The AD&A is another situation where, again, the auditor could express what the auditor considered the most significant risks in the audit and how they addressed them to give greater transparency into the audit, or could disclose certain aspects of management's estimates and judgments in the financial statements to give greater transparency into that. So, notwithstanding the fact that a going concern opinion wasn't given, various aspects of these proposals could have shed greater sunshine on the financial statements or the audit to have helped investors.
And my final question relates to what you brought up, Jay, and that is I just want to point out that I've heard over and over again, as I mentioned to FASB, or as we mentioned to FASB, that investors remain very concerned about the time it is taking for FASB, the SEC, the PCAOB to finalize their going concern standard. That's been out for years and years. And reviewing the transcript of the hearing before Senator Reid's subcommittee, I would hope that we could expedite, along with FASB and the SEC, finalizing that going concern standard. I mean, this has been years in the process, and I think it's time to establish a timetable and finalize that standard. But I realize all three parties have to coordinate and work very closely together to accomplish that.
My only comment on that would be that, of course, we do have an existing standard which requires the auditors to assess whether there are indicators of substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue as a going concern, and then to assess the company's response to those indicators, and if the auditor ultimately concludes that there is substantial doubt, to report that going concern in the auditor's report. So we have an existing standard today, but I think, as you said, FASB is looking at management disclosures, and to the extent FASB changes those, will address our standard, all in the effort to improve the current situation. But we do have a standard that we think is enforceable today with respect to the auditor's responsibilities to assess going concern.
I don't think investors would view the existing standard as being up to the task, and I think they will have viewed that responsibility or that standard as having failed during the crisis for the reasons that I mentioned in my opening statement. So I think they view a need for dealing with this pass-fail model as you are, and with the going concern standard as well. I mean, we hear over and over again that if you have a going concern, it's a pass-fail type of model. There could be unintended consequences. Well, if there are unintended consequences, maybe we ought to alter the standard so that we deal with the unintended consequences so people are not as concerned as they may otherwise be in terms of issuing a going concern. But I know that we continue to work on that. All I'm doing is encouraging all of us, to the extent possible, to come up with a finalized determination one way or another in terms of what that standard ought to look like.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Without further questions or comments, and with additional thanks from all the staff, and thanks to the board, I think the questions and discussions are always good, and these were particularly outstanding. I'll call the question. All those in favor of approving the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I think the ayes have it. The motion is carried. The concept release will issue. Thank you all, and we're adjourned.